Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Season 19, Episode 13. This is Writing Excuses.
A close reading on voice, Blue's perspective, confidence and vulnerability.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Wan.
I'm Erin.
And I'm terribly vulnerable. Also, I'm Howard, and I get to drive this episode. I love Blue's perspective. Maybe it's because I love plants. Maybe it's because I know Amal, who is responsible, as we have learned, for most of the writing of Blue's perspective. Let's begin with a reading from London Next.
London Next. The same day, month, year, but one strand over, is the kind of London other London's dream. Sepia-tinted, skies strung with dirigibles, the viciousness of empire acknowledged only as a rosy backdrop glow redolent of spice and petaled sugar. Mannered, as a novel, filthy only where story requires it. All meat pies and monarchy. This is a place Blue loves and hates herself for loving.
Embodied in that last sentence, for me anyway, is the very soul of confidence and vulnerability, the ability to love a thing and to acknowledge that loving it is problematic. Loving it may, in fact, weaken you. Loving may, as many of us have discovered, expose you to pain.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about this.
There's so much in this voice that I love that is so distinct from Red's voice, right? We're getting such a different rhythm, such different kind of imagery. You know, we talked about how short the sentences are when it comes to Red, and you get these short sentences in contrast with longer ones to communicate different kinds of emotion, whereas Blue thinks in paragraphs. Blue thinks in long poetic thoughts, right? Viciousness of empire acknowledged only as a rosy backdrop glow. I mean, you just keep going. It just keeps rolling and unfolding, and you get a sense of like how rambling Blue's thoughts are and how organic. And, you know, in this contrast between garden and agency, we get the sense of like shoots spreading across the ground, right? Like, you know, a rhizomatic structure to how she thinks. And it's really wonderful. And yet we're also getting something very parallel to what we got with Red, which is a core internal conflict. Her in conflict with herself, as we see Red trying to enjoy the thing and can't because of agency, we get this thing of Blue loving a thing that she doesn't. She hates the fact that she does love it, right? And so these tensions within the character are foregrounded in both cases. But wow, is the technique different and how she gets that across?
I think that it's worth looking back at our first introduction to Blue, because Blue is the one who initiates contact.
Mm-hmm.
Blue's letter to Red, which we talked about a little bit during the Red POV.
And we'll talk more about when we get to the epistolary section.
Yeah, when we get to the epistolaries, in the fourth paragraph, I shall confess to you here that I'd been growing complacent, bored even with the war. Blue reaches out to Red at first out of boredom, out of desire for some sort of a connection beyond the incredibly rich connections, as we learn throughout the rest of the book, the garden and Blue's own upthread activities allow her. You know, she spends an entire lifetime on at least a couple of occasions married with kids, having, you know, careers and activities and building things and doing stuff. And just one of those lives would be enough for me. And yet here is this goddess almost, for want of a different, better word, who has become bored with that and so reaches out to the enemy for conversation.
What's really interesting, when you said the word reaching, it's, I think those long sentences almost give you that sense of reaching, because like they string on. And so they almost are like an outstretched arm, which I think is something I hadn't really thought about until this moment. And one of the reasons that I think that sentence length and punctuation are such amazing tools. Like one of the things I love, and I'm just saying this so it may not be true, is I notice all the dashes and the commas and the use of punctuation in the blue sections because they are these reaching sentences and you need that punctuation to tell you, you know, to make it make sense and to make you be able to follow that path that's being laid out for you in blues prose.
We get list after list after list of things because one of the things that the author is communicating is how hedonistic blue is, right? And, you know, we get a glimpse of that with Red too. There's a line about, you know, she has a fetish for feeling, which is a thing that I love, but it's so much more abbreviated than Blue, who it lingers in these things, right? She's talking about the tea. She looks forward to her own pot, anticipates the dark, smoky, malty path her chosen tea will pick between the notes of candied rose, delicate bergamot, champagne, and muscat and violet. And, you know, going to your point, Aaron, in that sentence, we lose the commas at some point. The list gets away from her and we start just getting ands instead of this list of commas. As she keeps being like, oh, wait, and also this, right? And it just indicates such a deep connection to feeling alive, to tasting, to eating. And, you know, we get long descriptions of that in some of the letters as well, as, you know, Red and Blue go back and forth about, do you eat? What is eating to you? Do you enjoy it? You know, and all these wonderful things as, you know, Blue sort of lays out this very seductive path for Red to sensation, to experience.
In talking about confidence, there's a paragraph that epitomizes Blue's confidence to me. It is not entirely my intent to brag. I wish you to know that I respected your tactics. The elegance of your work makes this war seem like less of a waste. Speaking of which, the hydraulics in your spherical flanking gambit were truly superb. I hope you'll take comfort from the knowledge that they'll be thoroughly digested by our mulchers, such that our next victory against your side will have a little piece of you in it. Better luck next time, then. I love that. I don't know what the hydraulic flanking gambit was, or what the mulchers are, and I don't need to. What I need to know is that Blue is confident in victory and so confident that she can express that. It is not entirely my intent to brag, not entirely, but there's some boasting here to an enemy, giving them information about what you're doing. Such supreme confidence. I love it.
And we also see that confidence in her body language, the actions that she takes. Just in, like, there's a moment when the server arrives and they put down the tea
in London
set,
next.
In London next, and it's the sentence that just caught me is, as she settles the teacup on its saucer, however, Blue's hand snaps out to circle her retreating wrist. It's like it's this reminder of this enormous physical competence and confidence. You know, the server looks terrified. This set, says Blue, adjusting, softening her eyes into kindness, her grip into a caress, is mismatched. It's like, I can see that moment so clearly, but also the confidence to go, oh, okay, no, I came on too strong, back it down, and always being completely in control.
One thing I really love about this, you know, confidence and vulnerability dichotomy here is it creates distance to the character, right? Mm-hmm. We talked about this in the voice of Red about how close we are to her thoughts sometimes, how we are in that immediacy of her thought process, and that when we're not, it's creating distance. Versus here, we almost never get a real solid glimpse into Blue's thought process, right? But we are getting the effects. We're getting, you know, doesn't tell us, oh, that was too much. Instead, we're getting her action of like releasing, calming. And we know why she did those things, or we're inferring why, but we're not seeing it from the interior, right? And it's such a difference in Blue's like remoteness. I have a thought about this book, which is kind of unusual, that I think the book is more from Red's perspective than Blue's. Hmm. It's almost like the sections about Blue are written from Red observing Blue than it is necessarily from Blue's. This is not actually true. This is just like a little like thought I have sometimes when experiencing it, because we have that distance from Blue. And because there's like this romanticism to how we see Blue that almost feels from filtered through another perspective. And I really love that.
I feel it the other way. Yeah. When I am identifying more with Blue, but when there have been a couple of times when I've sat down to read where I've just been frustrated with stuff, been perhaps a little more red in my brain, and it's felt like you're describing. Yeah. And so I think the book, I think that may be something you brought to the text.
Yeah. Well, that's what's beautiful about it is because of the way the voices work, different people will connect with different parts in different ways.
Yeah.
And, you know,
But I mean, like, I feel like the it is equally split between the two of them. But I think that it is the difference in the way the characters inhabit their own bodies, and the way they move through the world. Like, we have this section where she's like, where she's, you know, getting another message. But she wills herself not to look around, commands every atom of her body into stillness, forbids the need to leap into the kitchen and pursue and hunt and catch. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, there's like, I can feel that moment in my own body of that, like, oh, no, don't look around, stay put. So, but it is different than the way Red inhabits her body.
I think this would be a perfect moment for us to will our bodies into stillness and go into the break. And when we come back, we'll speak more about the beautiful voice of this story.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Making your mental health a priority is always a challenge. And I think it's easy to not prioritize it, especially when you're trying to figure out how to write a book. I think we have some deep cultural idea that artists should be tortured and depressed to make their best work. But in my experience, struggling to find clarity and motivation will hurt your process a lot more than help it. In my own life, therapy has been essential to figuring out how to navigate an industry seemingly designed to give all of us anxiety. Being able to talk to an expert can help you set better boundaries, find a balance between the demands of your work and your art, and navigate the complexities of being a published writer. That said, finding a therapist is never easy, especially if you're not in a major city like I am. That's where a service like BetterHelp can be of use to help you start the process while you figure out what your needs are for your mental health journey. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/WX today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/WX.
Turn holiday travel from stressful to rewarding. Rakuten helps you save big on travel. They give you cash back when you book with sites like Expedia, Best Western, and Hertz. Even better, you can stack cash back on top of other rewards, like airline miles, credit card points, and hotel loyalty programs. Rakuten partners with over 3,700 stores, including Away Luggage, Ray-Ban, and Macy's, so you can be prepared with all the travel essentials and, of course, cute fits for your trip. Keep the rewards going with cash back on holiday gifts for friends and family. With Rakuten, you'll never miss out on savings at your favorite stores. The stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Join for free and start your shopping at Rakuten.com or use the Rakuten app. That's Rakuten.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Surprising no one, I love Jane Austen. I also love murder mysteries. Claudia Gray has a great series going in which she takes characters from Jane Austen novels and puts them into classic cozy mystery settings. The second in the series, The Late Mrs. Willoughby, has all the twists I want, plus the sparkling banter and social commentary of Jane Austen. Plus, it has a romance between our heroine, Miss Tilney, daughter of Catherine from Northanger Abbey, and young Mr. Darcy, the son of Lizzie and the Darcy. This book is delightful. So, check out The Late Mrs. Willoughby by Claudia Gray.
I want to ask what we mean by vulnerability. I feel like confidence is pretty easy to define, and maybe I'm wrong and that's just overconfidence. But with vulnerability, I feel like there are gradations, there are inflections in it. There is the vulnerability of, there's the vulnerability of the known unknown. The vulnerability of, I am falling in love and I know that that can expose me to heartbreak, but I don't know what kind of heartbreak. So there's an unknown out there, but I know kind of the shape of it. And then there's the unknown unknown, which is I'm throwing myself on your mercy and I have no idea what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that one of the things that we see in the earlier chapters is that Blue is being pretty protective, that she's aware of this thing and she's reached out those long-reaching sentences. But there's still, a slight distance where she's like, but I don't want to, I want this and I don't want it. So there's a protection there. But when we get later, there was a section, Howard, that you had pointed out that I think is one of the places where Blue is beginning to be like, no, I really am. I'm ready to be, I accept the fact that pain may come.
Yes, I love this. A little bit of setup. Red has been discovered, kind of, mm-hmm. and been told, hey, there's this other agent out there, Blue, and she's been following you around. And we think if you send her a letter and we poison it, you can trick her into reading it and consuming it, and we can completely undo her. And Red participates, but not before sending a letter that says, don't read my next letter. So, her heart should have been broken by better. Her betrayal should have had sharper teeth. All that, and now this. Still, she strokes its leaves. Still, she bends to sniff the stems, a blend of cinnamon and rot. She was always going to eat it down to the root. This, for me, is the core of not just vulnerability, but confidence in that. Mm-hmm. An acceptance of, I don't know what is going to happen next, but I know I have to do this, even though it is going to hurt. Even though it may destroy me, I have to do this.
Yeah. And what I love is how much is communicated through the voice here, right? We talked in an earlier section, these long rambling lists that Blue loves to make, these different descriptions, these different, you know, sensory things. And here she's talking about her own heartbreak. And she just says all that. And then there's an M dash, all that. This idea of like, she can't even bear to do the thing that she always does, which is do this long rambling discursive thing, talking about the different aspects of it. She starts to, right? She starts to make this list and then she's just too sad. And I love how much that comes through. And just, you know, my heart stops with her. I feel her come to the realization of, what's the point of this? What am I doing? This is too painful. And again, the voice gets that across so well of how different this Blue is than the taunting, menacing version that we met earlier. Sort of the pure hedonist that we see in the tea shop. This is someone different. This is somebody who has cracked herself open for this other person. And now the knife is going in.
And that difference is key to anything that you are writing that has character development in it. You want to be able, as a writer, to show us through many tools, but character voice may be foremost among them, how a character is changing from when we first meet them to later in the book.
And I think that one of the things that is really cool about the change here is that you see how each of the characters influences the other, mm-hmm. how the voice of one changes the voice of the other. And in this case, that makes a lot of sense because this is a conversation between two people. But in your story, you might think, what is the mechanism for your character's change? And then how might that impact the voice? If they become more confident, are the word choices stronger? Like, are they words that are more active? You know, if they become more contemplative, do they have more moments of filtering? Are they set back more? And it is in those changes that you're showing that character growth.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that you can look at is points of repetition as ways of emphasizing some of the change, like the all that, choosing where you're going to put those pieces of repetition, choosing like why you're drawing a line under something by pointing at it. Like, why are you focusing us there? And in this case, that I think one of the reasons that gets repeated or is so effective when repeated is because of you can hear the influence of Red on Blue's voice. The other thing that I was thinking about looking at this was something, Aaron, you said earlier, was when we talked about hitting a character voice very hard at the beginning, and that by the end, since this section that we're talking about is much later in the book, the reader knows already and can fill in a lot of the emphasis that the writer is intending. So we've got this point where Blue is like has these rhythms that are very much like Red, but then when we get the confidence that we come back into her own voice, and one of the things that's very interesting about the way people inhabit language is that when you are looking at whether or not someone picks up an accent when they move to another place, it is often related to their confidence in themselves. The people who are very confident in themselves will mimic someone else's speech patterns as a way to make that other person feel comfortable, as a way to experiment. But people who are less confident will cling to their own original accent as a way of clinging to their self-definition. And so for me, one of the things that I find fascinating about the all that, is that she is leaning in to Red's, but then when she is eating it, we get back to the listing. She thinks of Ortolan as she chews the plant's fibers, considers draping her head in white cloth for closer communion. She wipes bright blood from her lips and laughs softer and softer, swallowing every stroke of flavor. And we get back into those long things as she becomes more vulnerable as she is in the process of dying. And then going back to that thing we were talking about earlier, we have a sentence that is popped out in italics where it is completely her own thought very clearly. She thinks loathsome in its own deliciousness. And that's such a very, very Blue way to frame things. And I love that it's unambiguous, that it is clearly a thought that she is having while this experience is occurring. And that's, again, something, a tool that you can use is to think about, you know, when do I want to be very clear that this is exactly the sentence that my character is thinking?
Well, and just the imagery here, right, of the bright blood coming from her lips, she's wiping her tears and the blood off, you know, and it's like literally the red mixing with blueness here, right? Mm-hmm. She's taking red into herself and it is killing her. But then it ends with she rises, washes her face, washes her hands, and sits down to write a letter. She has removed the red from her in this moment, right? She has steeled herself against this thing. And we sort of feel a door closing in this moment as she has opened herself to the deepest vulnerability and she is returning to, nope. I am Blue. This is who I am. And there's such a heartbreak in how this chapter ends that is in such contrast to the heartbreak that comes earlier with all that.
The question that I asked for the second half of this episode, you know, the gradations, the types of vulnerability. I love that we see that we see kind of the whole gradient in this section we've just read. Her heart should have been broken by better. There's
that,
heartbreak,
yeah.
But there's also disappointment. Disappointment is something to which we're vulnerable. Her betrayal should have had sharper teeth. Well, betrayal is yet another level of vulnerability. And then we get to that last one. And that's the homework that I want to send you out with. Are you ready? I want you to write vulnerability as a known known, something that is that the character knows exists and knows the shape it will take, as a known unknown. They know it exists, but they don't know the shape it will take. And as an unknown unknown, they have no idea what shape it will take or how it exists or anything about it. And yet they are confident enough to be vulnerable to each of those.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Hey, podcast lovers. Did you know that you can upgrade your experience here with our ad-free tier on Patreon? Head over to patreon.com/writingexcuses to enjoy an ad-free oasis, as well as access to our virtual Discord community where you can talk with your fellow writers.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dongwon Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save big money.